Hi. For this episode, just wanted to say there's a content warning. This episode, the following topics are discussed, including medical trauma, cancer, depression, and suicidal ideation. So just content warning for those who are going to dive into this episode. And if you're like, I don't know if I want to listen to that right now, that's totally okay. But this episode is great. Just letting you know beforehand. Welcome to Do It For The Gram and Enneagram Podcast with your host, Certified Enneagram Coach Milton Stewart, where we do it for the Enneagram, not Instagram. Today, I have an absolutely amazing individual on this episode, and she has been on multiple episodes beforehand. Today, I have Elizabeth Worm, who I'm going to allow her to reintroduce herself. Allow me to reintroduce myself. Okay, anyway, I'm going to let you reintroduce yourself in a second, but I want to speak to how amazing it is when you meet someone who has been doing their inner work and you can talk to them on like several different levels and you both get it. You know, in life, I think that's rare. And I think it's important to find people who operate at a similar frequency and can think deep and you can have great resonance and communication with on multiple levels of life in general. So Elizabeth, can you please maybe reintroduce yourself some? And I would love for us, I'll help us get into what we're going to talk about today, which I think is super important for so many people.
Yeah, thanks for the introduction. I'm Elizabeth Worm. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. And I call myself a theater director and Enneagram teacher. By day, I am an IT recruiter. But theater and the Enneagram are my passions. So I unfortunately was diagnosed with Crohn's disease in 2015. With that came a lot of depression and anxiety, a PTSD incident, and chronic migraines, just all sorts of stuff. Then last year, I was diagnosed with brain cancer. We're still trying to figure out prognosis, but it's been a crazy year trying to navigate that. So that's a little bit about some of me.
Yeah. So I invited Elizabeth on because, as I mentioned before, like she's a person who's been doing inner work for a long time. And to do your inner work and to be battling like a chronic illness. And now, as I just mentioned beforehand, and I'm just going to say it this way on purpose, but kicking cancer's ass and working through that over and over again. I wanted to have you on, Elizabeth, because I wanted people who are going through something that is chronic. It is continuous. And it's even, you haven't shared your Enneagram type yet, which you will in a second, but you know, the impact it has on like even your own type structure and how it can be such a counter thing, but even through that, it can be some gifts in helping you to do your inner work in a more serious, intentional, intense way. But also it can be, you know, really tough in some ways that maybe most people wouldn't understand if they aren't experiencing chronic illnesses or battling something like cancer, you know. So Elizabeth, can you maybe explain or share how this journey has kind of been for you? One, starting with maybe just like in general, like battling like Crohn's, right? Because you even have a podcast, like you have like an Instagram page that talks about. Right. So can you share a little bit about that first and then we'll move into the rest?
Yeah. Yeah. So my Instagram is survival_thrival. Only go there if you're ready for the unfiltered comments or content. I needed an outlet to post something real. And I have a personal Instagram account, but I'm a two. I'm an Enneagram two. So I didn't want to be an inconvenience to anybody who didn't want to hear about the hard stuff. So I created this extra Instagram account and said, if you want to hear about the unfiltered hard stuff of my life, you're welcome to join me over here. But if you don't want to hear it, you can follow my highlights on my regular page. So that's an Enneagram 2 thing. I mean, I could see some other types doing that as well for different reasons, but my reason is because I don't want to be a burden. So fully aware of that and just going to go with that. In 2015, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. I was living a very stressful lifestyle. I was running a theater company. I was in grad school. I was working full time, actually a couple different jobs. And yeah, I was young and thriving and doing a lot of really exciting things. And I was a say yes person. I said yes to everything. And so with autoimmune diseases, stress is not, they don't know what causes them, but stress has been common to figure out that their stress plays a part in that. Stress is kind of a trigger for flare-ups and things like that. And what it felt like in my body was that I just ran my body into the ground. And at some point my immune system broke and started fighting against me. At first I was kind of in denial about it. I didn't slow down my pace of life. I was just like, okay, we're going to take some steroids and we're just going to keep going. And I directed a musical. I directed two musicals that summer until one of the tech weeks, I was shaking so bad. I had to go lay down in my car because I hadn't been able to keep down food in like a week. And that was, I had to go lay down in my car every 30 minutes and then come back and direct a little bit more and build a little set and then go back in my car and lay down a little bit more. And I mean, I was surviving on like pretzels and applesauce at that time. So ended up getting a different doctor that helped me get better meds, but I wasn't slowing down. That was the thing, is like, I wasn't slowing down and I didn't realize that that was a key component in what was going to be part of my healing journey. So I don't really know what I realized in 2016 at some point that I needed to slow down. That was kind of a New Year's resolution for me. Part of the illness journey, chronic illness journey, is trying to get doctors to believe you. That's really a big, big part. It's a strain on the patient because they're the one who's sick and they have to advocate for themselves. So, you know, I think every type can advocate for themselves, but for me as a type two, I really had to lean into some positive type eight space and say, no, you're going to listen to me. And this is what's going on. And it's not just in my head. And my, even though my blood labs are fine, I'm telling you that there's something wrong. So I think every type can do that with some work. It's harder for others and easier for others. If you're a 3, 7, or 8, you probably have a little more courage to do that, more than like a 2 or a 9 or a 6. So, yeah, so really advocating for yourself, resting ended up being one of the hugest things. I was not fully able to rest until 2020. Like, I started this journey in 2015 and I did not stop until the world stopped in 2020. I tried really hard. I shut down my theater company in 2018. But at the same time, I took another job that was a traveling meeting and event planner, and I had to travel while being sick. And I couldn't eat. I had really limited dietary needs. And so I had a lot of dietary restrictions. And so I had to bring my own food with me everywhere we went. And I had lists for chefs at the kitchen to be able to make me customized foods. And I was working 16-hour days. And again, not slowing down. Like, just because I closed my theater company did not mean that I slowed down. I needed the health insurance, like, to be honest. Like, I wanted to work at this company, but like, the health insurance was one of the main factors. I needed to work for somewhere that would be able to support my Crohn's disease, but we live in a in a society where healthcare is hard to come by unless you work for certain companies. And so, and I'm not going to get into politics on that, but I just really, my view on healthcare really changed once I was diagnosed. And I was the one needing help. So what kind of ended up being in this cycle was, I need a job so I can support my chronic illness with healthcare, but the job is stressing me out. And the job is making me sick. And so it was this endless cycle of I'm sick because of my job, but my job provides me health insurance. And I had to choose my job over my health so much that I just, again, ran myself into the ground. 2018 was probably the worst year of my life, even considering that I've been diagnosed with cancer now. Like, probably still 2018 was the worst year of my life. There were so many random health things that got done, random surgeries and other things, all probably related to Crohn's and being an autoimmune, being someone with an autoimmune disease. So I learned, you know, you really have to lean into that aid space for myself. And also, you know, sometimes resting is doing something that you enjoy. Like, a lot of times resting for me was just laying in bed, but sometimes, you know, playfulness is something that you can rest doing. I took some improv classes and that was really freeing. In improv, you have to say yes, not in a people-pleasing way. You have to say yes to whatever the other person says on stage and they say yes to you. And so my filter had to go away. I couldn't think about what I was going to say before I said it. I just knew that I was going to say something. It would be supported by people on stage. And so as a two, people pleaser really want to filter everything that I say, even now, filtering everything that I say through this filter. And in improv, you can't do that. So that was something that was kind of healing for my type structure. Improv also showed me that there are vulnerabilities for each type. And improv creates this vulnerability space because you have to trust other people to have your back, and you have to trust yourself to put yourself in the spotlight. It kind of goes against the ego, goes against your inner critic. There are a lot of things in life that can make you vulnerable. Improv is a great example of kind of a safe environment where you can be vulnerable instead of like in a work environment where your job is on the line. You know, improv is a very playful, safe space where you can practice being vulnerable and trying something new. So thinking about like what creates vulnerability, and I love reading about Brené Brown and her theories on vulnerability. She talks about, you know, trying something new, sharing a story, or slowing down to rest. Those are all three different ways that you can be vulnerable. And slowing down to rest was really hard for me. So I'm rambling a little bit, but in 2020, okay, COVID happened and the world shut down. I was put on a furlough with work. I was off for 8 weeks. And it was hard in some ways, but it was the best gift I could have given to my body. Like, where I was just able to be off for 8 weeks. It was not paid, but, thankfully, I was in a living situation where that wasn't debilitating. So yeah, I was living with this family and we just rested. Resting should not be a privilege. Everyone should have the opportunity to rest. Yes. I highly recommend following the Nap Ministry on Instagram, talking about rest for not just white people too, but that rest is necessary and not just a privilege. I read a lot of books on rest. So anyway, those are some things that like I did to combat the chronic illness was rest and play, putting myself in safe, vulnerable spaces where people could come support me. As a two, I also had to learn how to ask for what I needed, which meant that I had to figure out what I needed. And that took a lot of self-reflection and lots of therapy sessions to figure out what I needed. I did not get good at asking for help until probably this past year. It's probably the first time I've like actually let people help me. So that's been, 9 years? It's been 9 years for me to learn how to ask for help.
That's all? Just nine?
9 years since being chronic illness, like probably, you know, 34 years in my life. It's taken me 34 years in my life to learn how to ask for help.
Some people never learn. So shout out to the 9 or the 34. Oh man. So as a 2, what has been, from a type structure and an instinct structure, what has been the most challenging part of doing your inner work while battling chronic illness?
I mean, really those things of advocating for what I need, figuring out what I need, ask for what I need, slowing down to rest. Rest is one of the things that I needed. Realizing that it was okay to have needs, that it's okay to be needy. If it pushes people away, if your needs push people away, then they weren't probably the best people in your life to have. Yeah, a lot was just going to doctors and telling them, you know, this is the medicine that I need. Because at some point it got to where I couldn't trust doctors to do what was in my best interest, or they didn't know. Sometimes my case was just off the known charts. They didn't know what to do and they're just guessing. And so I had to do my own research and figure things out, and connected with a few type fives and sixes who love doing research.
Love it.
They would say, you know, here's some case studies that I found, you know, throw that in your bag of knowledge. And then I would bring that to the doctors and be like, hey, like, I learned this. What do you think about it? Really having to be informed. It's a lot, especially as the person who's going through all the things. You shouldn't have to jump through all the hoops while you're sick, but you know, you do. And I think one thing about, so you also have to learn how to grieve, and it's a constant letting go and grieving process, because the chronic illness is chronic. It's never going away. It's pervasive trauma. I was talking to my therapist the other day about shock trauma versus pervasive trauma. And shock trauma is the thing that happens to you once. It's really intense and it went too fast for your body to process. Pervasive trauma is the long-term trauma that happens. There's something that's not enough that's happening, like poverty or abuse. Mm-hmm. Chronic illness is one of those things as well. So over that amount of time, you have to grieve. But also what's hard to let other people know is that it's still going on in your life. And that's one thing that I use my Instagram account for, is like, hey, I'm still here. This hasn't gone away yet. You know, when you lose a loved one, someone passes away, everyone comes to the funeral and everyone's there for you. And they bake casseroles for you and they give you money and they bring you cards and flowers. And it's a really terrible time. You know, it's not, you know, you wish you didn't have to have all of that happen.
Right.
It's great to have the support, but you're really grieving your loved one. When you get diagnosed with a chronic illness, initially everyone's there. Same deal. But similar to like how someone who loses a person feels, you know, after the lights are off and the crowds go home, there's just this emptiness and the person has to live without their loved one and they're still grieving it for years, maybe the rest of their life.
Right.
And no one asks them, well, maybe no one, but also maybe someone. People in general don't follow up and ask, you know, how's that going? How can I support you in your time of grief? Same thing with chronic illness. My Crohn's didn't go away. It's still there. I have to live with it every day for the rest of my life. I will say, so cancer is really tough. It's really tough. Part of it, well, in my case, I have depression, anxiety, cancer. I just went through chemo for 8 months. I couldn't tell what was a side effect of what. The fatigue was the worst part. I didn't know if it was Crohn's fatigue, depression fatigue, or chemo fatigue.
Damn.
So I remember in 2021 having a really bad depressive episode, and the fatigue was so bad, and I was having really mysterious ovarian pain. I had some ovarian cysts burst. I had really bad migraines. I hadn't seen a neurologist yet, and there was no one there. There's just no one. And that was worse than getting diagnosed with cancer, because people showed up when I got diagnosed with cancer and no one showed up in 2021. There was no one. But because with cancer, we named it cancer and everyone knows about cancer. Everyone's like, cancer is terrible. It is. Don't get me wrong. I needed people for sure. Right. But the awareness of what chronic illness is, like cancer seems to be acute. You know, it's like a really, you know, you kick its ass for a year or so, and then hopefully it goes away. Right. With chronic illness, it's not like that. It's forever. Most likely, you know, until they find a cure. But what's interesting is my cancer is also chronic. I have a brain tumor and it's never going away. It's inoperable. It's going to be in my head until I die. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, it's not a, stage four tumor. It's kind of like a very slow growing tumor. And, you know, I have people who are really spiritual and they believe that I can be healed. I don't really know what I think about that. I guess anything is possible. But at this point, my doctors are acting like it's a chronic illness. You know, it's going to be something I have to be on medication for. I'm probably going to have to go on chemo multiple times in my life. Part of what happened to me is I had some major seizures, which is how we found out about the tumor. And so I now have epilepsy because the tumor grew to a point in my head where I have seizures. So I have to be on three different seizure medicines. Luckily, I have not had a seizure in, you know, a while. So I'm able to drive now. I've been approved to drive. So I'm legal to drive. But that's because I'm on three different kinds of seizure medicine. And yeah. I have to take, how many pills is it? Probably like 9 pills, and I take them twice a day, and that's just for seizures. I'm on 20 pills a day for everything that I do, and that's not including chemo. Yeah, Milton's face, yes.
Yeah.
So just the energy and the regimen and the rigorousness or the rigor of having to manage, be your own project manager of having an illness. I mean, every night before I go to bed, I do my pills. I used to do them weekly, but that got too overwhelming. So I do them daily now. And with chemo, I was on a chemo pill. I didn't have to go in do it to the hospital to do infusions. It was a pill that I did 7 days on, 7 days off. But I had to take them strategically around my anti-nausea medicine, because otherwise I would just, you know, get really sick. So I had to take anti-nausea medicine every 3 hours, and you have to take chemo on an empty stomach. You can't have eaten for 3 hours. So doing all this math of like, when do I sleep? When do I take the medication? When do I eat? When do I take chemo? Like, when do I take my seizure meds on top of that? Oh, I have a doctor's appointment. It's going to ruin the window of time that I'm supposed to eat. Oh, I actually have to work. I've been working full time this entire time. I've taken a couple days off here and there. When I had my initial brain surgery, it took 3 days off. But, you know, that was it. I had brain surgery. It took 3 days off. You know, like that's, that's just not, you know, somebody literally said to me on a work call, they were like, well, it's not brain surgery. And they had no idea that I had just had brain surgery.
Like, well, actually, let me tell you about it.
I just keep rambling. I don't know what the point is here, but it's chronic. People showing up is great and needed. Reminding people that you need them still is necessary, because otherwise people will forget and go on with their own lives, which is valid. I mean, everybody else has their own things going on, but continuing to learn how to ask for what you need beyond just that window of time when people show up in the hospital with flowers, you know?
Right.
I think it's important to advocate for what you need.
Ever feel stuck, lonely, or discontent in your relationships? If you're nodding yes, then I've got some good news for you. Certified Enneagram coach Tyler Zach is hosting a virtual summit on March 5th through the 7th for thousands of Enneagram enthusiasts called the Ennea Summit, Love and Relationships. This is your chance to uncover Enneagram secrets that will take all of your relationships to the next level. The best part is you can join us from the comfort of your home or office. If you reserve your free seat today, you'll receive a daily email on March 5th through the 7th with the link to access to 20 renowned Enneagram experts, such as Susan Stabile, Steph Baron Hall, Ashton Whitmoria Ober, Gina Gomez, Dayo Ajunaku, and Nian Bong. Join us to discover your personality shapes all the relationships. We'll talk about how knowing the Enneagram can help you identify your partner's stress triggers, improve communication, enhance emotional and sexual intimacy, heal from an unhealthy ex, gain parenting insights, a lot more fun and exciting topics. So go and RSVP now to secure your free seat for the Ennea Summit coming up on March 5th through the 7th by visiting enneasummit.com. The link is in the show notes. Don't miss out on this amazing opportunity to learn from an amazing cast of speakers who want to be your guide in helping you take all of your relationships to the next level. Yeah, I have some, like, one, you're incredible in ways I didn't know before, even though as a, like, a friend, like, you're incredible. So to a degree, I understand it in an indirect way because I have a family member that I'm doing some similar things, not to the degree. But I'm resonating with, like, what you're saying, from a, like, a chair outside of your body, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. So I have so many questions. First question, and this is something that I am constantly trying to work on. How do I be in support? How do I be a good friend? And this is for people listening and myself too, because I'm working on this, to someone with a chronic illness or battling cancer. Like, how can you be a good friend or a good support person for someone who's experiencing that?
People need different things. I think their emotional needs of just, like, listening. There are practical needs, like somebody running to Walgreens to get your prescription or coming over to do your laundry because you can't get out of bed. For me, for a long time, for 6 months, it was, I needed a ride to places, to medical appointments and doctor's things, and maybe a day to just get out of the house because I couldn't drive. So, depending on how are you gifted, you know, like, are you gifted with practical caretaking, you know, giving someone a shower if you're the caretaker and they can't move, or giving someone a cooked meal, you know, that those practical things are necessary. But we're not just bodies. We also have hearts and minds. And so for my friends who come over and my family members who come over and just let me talk, or they're really invested and they ask, like, really caring questions and informed questions, that's really helpful. Also, being ready for the real answer is needed, because I have people at work who are like, oh, hey, Elizabeth, how are you doing? And I can't ever tell if I'm supposed to say, I'm terrible, I'm on chemo this week, or be like, oh, hey, good, how are you? You know, so it's, I kind of switch it up, you know, depending on the day.
Yeah.
And one time someone said, well, how are you really doing? And I thought I could trust them. And I said, well, you know, I'm learning how to grieve the life that I thought I was going to have. I didn't think that this was going to be part of my life. And she was like, Elizabeth, why are you grieving? You have so much life ahead of you. She's like, you have to stay positive. And I was like, I thought I could trust this person. You know, she, right. And I realized she couldn't handle my uncomfortable state. Like, it made her uncomfortable for me to be sad in her presence. And so you end up feeling like you have to take care of the person you just told these feelings to and make sure their feelings are okay. Similar to, you know, like, again, a funeral and some, you know, somebody comes up to the person who lost their loved one and they start crying even harder than the person is. And then the person who lost their loved one has to take care of this random acquaintance. And it's not their job to do that, you know? So, So, yeah. So she was just like, be positive. And that was the last thing I needed that day. And I realized, you know, I can't trust people who say things like that. That's not what I need. So be ready to hear the real answer. Don't ask unless you're ready to hear the real answer and realize it might make you uncomfortable.
Right.
But that's okay.
Another question I have for you is one that just, I think it's important for you to answer and for you to share. But what keeps you going?
That's a good question. As someone who struggled with depression and suicidal thoughts in the past, and Milton, you might want to put a content warning on this whole episode.
Okay, I got you.
just, you know, depression, suicidal thoughts, chronic illness, medical trauma, you know, all of those types of things. I didn't used to want to live all the time. You know, there would be times where I'm like, I was never hospitalized for anything like that, but I just didn't want to live because I didn't have a reason to live. What's interesting is how cancer kind of flipped that. And all of a sudden I was like, I am working to live now. Like these measures I'm taking now, I want to live.
Right.
So it was so odd. Antidepressants help a lot. One thing that happened to me in the hospital is they took me off my antidepressant because it was more likely to cause seizures now that I have epilepsy. And so I went through withdrawal. They cut me off cold turkey, went through withdrawal. Took me 3 weeks to get my psychiatrist and the neurology team to connect and get me on something different. So I was on 3 weeks of no antidepressant. Plus I got the stomach flu. It was a really bad time. It was really bad. I remember riding home in an Uber after something at night and just feeling so numb and talking to God and just be like, if this is what living is, then I don't want to do it. You know, once I got on the right medication formula, those thoughts went away. Okay. So I know everybody has different opinions on what you should medicate for and what you shouldn't, or how much or when. And that decision is up to you. You have to make that decision for you. Only you can know that for yourself. But for me, medication was necessary in order for me to keep living. So those thoughts kind of melted into the background, and I decided that I wanted to live. There's a musical called Next to Normal, which is about a dysfunctional family and a woman who has bipolar disorder and goes through her life of hallucinations and doctor's appointments and family drama. It's a rock musical. It's excellent music. There's this, towards the end, she sings this lyric that says, you find some way to survive and you find out you don't have to be happy at all to be happy you're alive. So there's like this happiness about I'm alive. Like right after my brain surgery, I was like, I'm alive. Right. You know, I wasn't happy. Like I wasn't joyful,
right?
But I was happy to be alive.
I'm still here.
Still here. Exactly. So I think there's this happiness to be alive, but there also is like, what's my purpose? You know, what keeps me going? I would say my relationships. I'm a very extroverted person. I'm a type two. Relationships are my bread and butter. They're my fuel. That might be different for every type. For me, it's the relationships. It's also creating art, because of my love for theater and doing improv and directing shows. The past year, I didn't really get to do much of that. And it was really hard. It felt really hard to not have a purpose, not to have something that I was enjoying doing. I was trying to find some sort of hobby that I could do because, well, like my whole life was just doctor appointments and laying in bed. Mm-hmm. So sometimes your life is just doctor's appointments and laying in bed. But right now, so I've been through a year. I just finished chemo. And I'm finally, for the first time in 16 months, getting to a point where I'm going to produce a show. I'm going to produce a show, and it's going to be in September. I'm also working on co-producing another show, an improv show with a friend that's going to happen in July. So we're hosting auditions for it at the end of April, which is really exciting. So like I have two shows, that are coming up and I'm so excited. It gives me something to think about, something to plan for, something to celebrate. So I don't know what that is for you all. And you don't always get to do it. You know, sometimes you have to just survive, and surviving is, I was talking to my therapist, surviving is not necessarily an accomplishment. But it's, I don't even know what to say. It is surviving is survival. Is. Like you survived.
It is. Yeah.
It's important. I was looking at survival as an accomplishment and I was like, I don't feel like I should get gold stars for surviving. She was like,
I made it.
I was like, I don't think that I've earned gold stars. She's like, no, she's like, it's not, you didn't accomplish something. You survived. That those are two different things. So yeah. What was the question?
No, no, you hit it on. I said, what keeps you going? You know,
what keeps me going? Yeah.
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 Those types of relationships and doing what you love. I think the relationships kept me going while I couldn't do what I loved. But now that I have a little bit more freedom, I'm coming up to where I can, my head's coming up out of water to take a breath, and I can now do what I love. I don't know how long that's going to last, but I'm going to do it for as long as I can.
Oh, this is rich. So how has like your inner work aided you in being able to, I guess, keep going? This is kind of a variation on the question before, but how has your inner work aided you to really move towards, like you said your purpose? I would say I would tie that in with your essence, because it's something you mentioned there around your relationships. They are what kept you going. That's like part of what keeps you going, right? The things you're able to create within yourself and put into the world. You know, last year at the IEA conference, you hosted, you presented, you know, and I was a part of it. And I was in the improv and I was like, okay, here we go. like I'm all seven-ish. Then I'm like, oh, we got to do improv now. You got to be out there. Like got to go with the flow with other people. so that was funny to see myself in whatever. But how has your inner work aided you? Because a lot of times, you know, we talk about inner work and we think of really lower levels of stuff. We don't think about our purpose and the essence of what we bring to life until we have moments that help us like, oh, damn, this thing is, you know, not forever. So how has your inner work aided you in being able to, really connect to the purposeful things that you are that keeps you going?
So thinking about the Enneagram work I've done in the past 10 years, I have learned to ask for what I need, which I've harped on a bunch. I've learned about my ego and what my ego, the story my ego tells me, which is that I'm not wanted unless I do things for people. I have worked with my instinctual subtype stack, and I'm rethinking all of that right now because my instincts are all weird. I used to be a social or navigating first, then a transmitting or sexual one-to-one, and then my blind spot was self-preservation or preserving. I think that might still be the case, but I have had to work so hard on self-preservation tasks, which is keeping your body alive. And like I said at the beginning of talking about Crohn's, I was not good at keeping my body alive. I just kept going and going and going, and took me years to learn to choose my body over ambition, over relationships, over having fun. So a lot of my work has been around self-preservation and preserving tasks. Some of my work has been leaning into my stress number 8, leaning into my security number 4. Security is when I can be creative. When I am not necessarily people-pleasing, I'm actually looking inward and creating something new from there, which is a lot of my theater work. 4 space is also a space where I can go when I'm feeling secure and being alone. When I'm alone in 2 space, I get very anxious and need people. I've worked really hard on how to be alone. I'm single. Sometimes I live alone. Sometimes I have a roommate. I've been single almost my whole life. I'm 34. So I do spend a lot of time alone, which I've learned how to deal with that. I've learned how to be alone with my thoughts and not freak out. I've learned grounding tactics and meditation tactics and things like that that help me when my thoughts are spinning. Yeah, so I think those are some things that I've learned. I think by just exploring, you know, wings and stress and security number and subtype and ego, your inner critic, I mean, all of those things are just a part of me. And then, you know, layering spirituality on top of it. I mean, that's a whole thing, going through, you know, spiritual deconstruction and trying to figure out, like, why am I here and what is God like, you know, especially since a lot of my existence centered around who God was. And now I'm not really sure what that looks like. Right now, I'm in a space of questioning a lot of things and rethinking things. But there's a lot of world expansion. Like, I think God is bigger than what I used to think they were. I think that the Enneagram shows you how different people are. And initially I went through a phase where, you know, you're just typing everybody that you meet because you're so excited about it.
Right.
But now I'm to a point where I meet someone and I'm like, I don't know where you fit in the Enneagram. You have qualities of all sorts of people. Like, these types just keep getting expanded for me. Meeting someone who isn't the stereotype, isn't just the autopilot type of person. They've done their work, so they exhibit all sorts of qualities and behaviors, and you don't necessarily know their motivation right away. So, you know, that you can't put a number on them and move on, you know? So Enneagram work has expanded my thoughts about other people, about each type. Right. So yeah, there's a lot of expansion.
So one thing I want to ask, and I think this is important. What advice would you give to someone who is has a chronic illness and trying to do their inner work, and or constantly working on kicking cancer's ass over and over again?
Yeah.
What advice would you give them in trying to do their inner work
Well, sometimes you have to let autopilot drive the car. I think it's important to know when ego is in charge versus when your essence is in charge. I think it's important to know the difference between those. But in Chichi Ogorum's book, she talks about defensive mechanisms and driving a car, and sometimes ego's in the car driving, and sometimes you're in the car driving. When we are awake at the wheel, that's when I think we're doing our best work. We're able to be more in control of our lives, living more out of our essence. When our defenses are up, ego is driving the car. We're on autopilot. We're on cruise control. Sometimes that's because we have to be. Sometimes it's because we're in a space that's not safe. She talks about that in terms of racism, in terms of different cultures and different races, in spaces where it's not safe for them to be their most vulnerable self. I would say the same thing for people with illness. There are some spaces where it's not safe for you to be your most vulnerable self. It doesn't give you an excuse to be an asshole. I think if you can learn the difference between ego and essence, you can learn the difference between, when I say that, I mean the difference between your autopilot version, the stereotypical you, versus who you actually are. Your ego is just a fraction of who you are. Learn the difference, and then you can choose when to let ego take the wheel, when you're just too tired and you can't function anymore and you're just going to have to let somebody take the wheel so that you can rest. I think that's okay. Like, as long as it's your choice, then that's your choice. So for me, when ego's at the wheel, sometimes it looks like me people-pleasing or hosting or taking care of people or, you know, some other kind of exhausting activity. I'll tell an anecdote here real quick. I'm a board game nerd, and I went to a board game meetup through the Meetup app. And I was trying to meet people. You know, I'm trying to find a new hobby because I'm sick, I have cancer, and, you know, I'm wearing my cancer hat because my hair had fallen out, and I was just trying to meet new people and do something social. So I go to this board game bar in St. Louis called Pieces. It's a really great, they have like 1,000 different games there. It's awesome. And you can just sit and order food and play board games. So this meetup group, I show up and there's like 3 or 4 people sitting at a table and no one is looking at me. So I was like, hi, is this the board game meetup? And they were like, I was like, okay, so can I sit here? And they're like, So slowly more people started to trickle in. I was desperately trying to make eye contact with people, like desperately, so that I could introduce myself. And it looks like none of these people wanted me to introduce them myself. Wow. And so the more people started coming in, I was like, hi, are you here for the board game meetup? And they'd be like, yeah. I'm like, well, welcome. Thanks for joining.
That's brilliant. And
I started hosting the event myself. And then there were menus on the table. I'm like, does anyone need to see a menu? Oh, they have, this is how the system works. You get a game. You can order food. Oh, hey, are you here for the meetup? Oh, well, welcome. I'm Elizabeth. Thanks for coming. You know, just going back and back. And I realized I was doing it. I could see myself doing it. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, Elizabeth. Like, inside, it's like, Elizabeth, you are hosting an event that's not even yours. You are taking over and trying to make people feel welcome because no one made you feel welcome. So you want people to introduce themselves to you. So that's why you're introducing yourself to them. You're in this space of feeling insecure. So you're going to overcompensate and try to make other people feel secure. And so I was not driving the car. Like, I was in the passenger seat. I could just see it happening. And there was no way I could get back into that driver's seat. I was just driving off a cliff.
Take the wheel, ego. Take the wheel.
Take the wheel. And I was like, you know what? this is a space where I can just be on autopilot. It's not that important right now.
Yep.
So I just let myself do it and be in autopilot, and I played some games and it was fine. And I never went back. I need to go back. I need to try it again. But yeah, so that's like a lighthearted way of looking at like being on autopilot versus essence, you know. So if you can learn the difference, then you can kind of see when it's happening, and you can choose when to put up your defensive mechanisms. You can choose when you are going to be vulnerable, right? Like the person who told me to just be positive, like I let my defenses down, and that person just walked all over me. And so, you know, knowing who's a safe person for you. And honestly, a lot of times in doctor's offices, I'm in my eighth space. I am fighting.
You have to be shit.
Yes. Yes, I am. Asking them the hard questions. I'm giving them some attitude. I'm telling them no. And I just, one of the doctors recently wanted me to get another MRI for something that was not related to my case. And mm-hmm. I had just been in an MRI machine for 1 hour that no one told me that it was going to be an hour. And I was stuck in this tube feeling very claustrophobic for an hour. It was, mm-hmm. I get MRIs all the time that are like 20 minutes and I've gotten used to those, but the hour long one, that just had me panicking. So this other doctor that I'm seeing for another random issue that I have, she was like, well, we want to get you another MRI. So we're going to get you set up for that. And I said, you know what? I don't want to do that.
That's right.
She looked at me. She's like, what? I said, I'm not going to do that.
Yep.
And she was like, well, but it's important because of this. And I was like, you know what? Here's what I have going on. Is it more important than brain cancer? And she was like, well, I don't know your case. And I was like, yeah. So I'm not going to deal with this right now.
Exactly.
So once I brought up my cancer, she was like, okay, well, this can go on the bottom of your priority list issues. And I was like, thank you. And I didn't raise my voice, didn't get mad. I just stood my ground and was like, I'm not going to do that. Because I'm the customer. If you are in the medical system, you are the customer. If you are a patient, you are the customer. You get to decide how they treat your body. And that's if right. they're doing something that you don't want done, you can tell them to stop. If they mm-hmm. want to do a biopsy, you can say no. Like it yep. might not be in your best interest, but you can say no. I had to tell myself when I was doing chemo, every day that I took that chemo pill, I was like, you are choosing to take this chemo pill. No one's telling you to take it. You're choosing to do it because you're choosing to fight cancer, but it's your ultimate choice. You can stop anytime you want. You can stop. But I chose not to stop. So in the doctor's office, realizing like I am in the driver's seat and I am using my voice to say what I will and won't do.
That is so important as a person who's been an advocate for someone mm-hmm. In the medical field. I'm so glad you just said that because that is, oh my goodness, it needs to be said. Understanding that like, switching between a bunch of different doctors who aren't on the same page, who don't have mm-hmm. the most recent labs. I mean, yep. Like you said, being able to say, no, I'm not going to do that right now. Being able to say, I didn't like the way you did that or the way you did. Like, it is one of the most important things because most people don't know because maybe you haven't experienced, you know, but like, you ain't lying. Like when you mention that, like that's a whole nother conversation we can have another time about the medical field and learning how mm-hmm. to advocate. And talk like we can have that. I mean, even offline, because that like I'm trying my best not to curse more and more, even though it's like my show. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I'm trying to because I've had experiences very recently that are messed up. Yeah. That's not the word I want to use, but messed up, to say the least.
Well, I am happy to listen and empathize and be mad.
I'm gonna listen to you. All right, we're gonna be mad together. Shoot, man, we're gonna be mad together.
Be mad together. Oh, I'll validate your feelings.
Yeah, and I'll validate yours. Don't just be supporting over here. I need support too. Yeah, I know you're good. That's natural for you. No, I as a seven, I need to be able to do that work. is there anything else? Because you mentioned two things. You mentioned being able to allow the drive, allow your ego to drive the car sometimes. Sometimes you got to go on autopilot because you're not safe in the space. You need help. And, you know, that's what it's there for. It's a defense system for us to live, to keep us going. That's one. And then you said the other one's being able to step into our eight space, no matter what type you are, but step into a space when you go into medical areas. You say what you want, you say what your body needs, and you're able to advocate and stand up for yourself in these places, because these are still humans and they have a perspective that they've kind of been learned and grew up out of, but they don't have all of it. So
yeah.
Are there any other things you want to add to that? Because those two are super duper important.
Yeah, I would say on the other end of the spectrum, there are times when you can let your guard down, and that's when you let the right people in. Those are the people, as Brené Brown would say, who have earned the right to hear your story. They are your marble jar friends. You can look that up, marble jar friends. Brené Brown has stories about those. People who have earned your trust. And that's when you can let your defenses down and be small and be sad and feel your feelings and let people take care of you. That is equally as important.
Last thing before we wrap up, is there anything else you would like to share, and where can people find you if you want them to find you, by the way?
Yeah.
Let me preface that.
Well, yeah, you can find me at on Instagram at survival_thrival. That's survival_thrival, thrival, kind of like survival and thriving, but it rhymes with survival. And the reason I named it that was because some days you are thriving and other days it's a win to survive. So I try to post both the surviving and the thriving pictures. Sometimes I'm a little heavier on the content than I would like to be, but yeah, you can find me there. I also have a website that I use for like teaching Enneagram or some acting coaching things. So that's www.notjustenneacoach.com. That's not just Ennea coach.com, because I'm not just any coach and I'm not just an Enneagram coach either. So that's kind of my fusion of improv, acting, and Enneagram space. You can email me through that website if you want to. And lastly, I'll just say, like, be kind to yourself. Sometimes you're doing the best you can, and sometimes giving 100% is not possible. You're used to be 100%. And sometimes my mom tells me, like, you're giving 100% and it just doesn't look like you're past 100%. It doesn't mean you're lazy. It means your nervous system is not regulated and your body is doing its best to fight whatever's fighting it. So sometimes you just have to allow your nervous system to regulate, try to get out of that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn space. And that takes a lot of time and energy. So yeah, practice regulating your nervous system, knowing that you are doing the best you can. Sometimes doing nothing is totally fine. Sometimes asking for help is fine. Sometimes fighting is fine. Sometimes being needy is fine. So yeah, just be kind to yourself.
Elizabeth, thank you so much. Multiple levels. One, thank you for being so honest. Thank you for that level of vulnerability. I will put a warning, like, hey, before you listen, just know this is going to be real. Thank you for sharing it. That's a big deal. And I think it's going to be very helpful for people who may get overlooked when we talk about doing development work, personal growth work, inner work, people who have chronic illnesses or they're consistently kicking or working on kicking cancer's ass. Like, it's a lot. And most people who, if you haven't had a loved one or you haven't experienced it, you don't get it. You don't, you know. So I'm thankful that you could articulate and share it in such a beautiful way. And You are freaking amazing. I am trying my best not to cuss because, like, when, you know, when I really care, like, I cuss, like, I'm like, because it means, I'm like, it's not just a, you know, random cuss word. It's like, no, I am fucking serious about this. Like, you're incredible. And I am truly thankful you reached out to me years ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Just reached out, right. Just reached out because you never know what somebody reaches out. You know, like, I don't know what this is going to be about. But
I know. I was like, Milton is this really cool guy and he does really cool work. And I was like, I'm just going to email him.
So,
thanks for scheduling that call with me a long time ago, too.
Yeah, I got off the call. I was like, oh, she know her stuff. Oh, she real. Oh, she real. That's what I remember. I remember like, oh, she the real deal. Okay. I appreciate you. I do. I learn a lot from you. I learned stuff today I had no clue that you regularly go through, right? I knew it was a lot, but you just regularly go through and you still bring, on your days where you're able to, even though you may not feel it, you bring connection and community and joy to people. You make them feel warm and welcome to people, even when you may not feel, I mean, you literally gave a story, right? You literally just shared a story, like, where you've done it recently to a degree. So I just thank you for that, because I think that's so important. So yeah, I don't have words to say just how amazing it is from who you are and what you do. And I'll make sure all your links are in the show notes as well for people who want to reach out. But I just want to thank you. That was great in the true sense of it.
Well, thanks for all the questions you asked. I really appreciate you asking informed and caring questions.
Yeah, I'm gonna work on being better at that because my self-preservation, it has this idea of this privacy for myself. So I was like, well, I want to ask that because they may not want to answer that, right? But in actuality, the other person may be like, oh, thank you. You actually care. Like, oh, you know, so that is part of my work for sure. So your links will definitely be in the show notes. For people listening, I definitely hope if you haven't or you are experiencing a chronic illness or you're working on kicking cancer's ass, that this has been something that has been uplifting and motivational for you to keeping on. And so besides that, this is the end of the episode. I have nothing special and spicy to say because that was really filling all it was, right? So we'll just catch you on the next episode. Thank you all for listening. Continue to do your inner work. And just remember, do it for the gram, the Enneagram, of course, and for those people, for ourselves and those around us. All right. See y'all next episode. Bye.
Talk to you later.